Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Greetings, citizens of Earth, and all beings both extraterrestrial and interdimensional. My name is Adam Swiderski, and this is Who Won the Week, a podcast dedicated to the top stories from the week in geek. And boy, howdy, do we have a geeky week to talk about. But first, before we do that, as always, I would love to introduce my co-host and friend, Kara Mahorn, a.k.a. The Blurred Girl.
Hello.
Hi there.
Did you have a good week?
Personally, no.
Oh, no.
But in terms of my fandom, sure. Because everybody, Jean-Luc Picard is yes. back.
And you know what? I think because of fandom, like, even when I'm having a bad day, I'm like, let me read a comic. Let me go watch some science fiction.
Boy, did I need a bright spot this week. And
turn C-SPAN off and go watch some sci-fi.
And Space Dad's return is just the tonic that we all need to get through these trying times. But we're going to talk about that, obviously. Lots of Picard to talk about. We have some interview.
Yeah, you had some really cool interviews.
Well, it's early. You guys, it has been a long week. I apologize. But yes, I had the chance to talk to Will Wheaton, who has just recorded a new Audible version of The Martian, the Andy Weir novel, which is a great novel if you have not read it. And we talked about that. And of course, we talked about Star Trek and Picard as he's hosting Ready Room, the new CBS after show, and also has some small connection to both Patrick Stewart and Star Trek, tangentially.
Mm-hmm.
He's just been around, you know. Anyway, so we got that, but we got some news. Got a trailer to talk about for some Star Wars stuff. The Star Wars and Star Trek type of podcast.
Yeah, actually.
We're so basic.
except for what we're geeking out about. Actually, that is
That's
not
right.
going
to be. For now, but in general, your basic podcast. Okay, so.
He said it, guys.
That's right. But before we get to all that awesome stuff, we like to do a thing at the beginning of every episode where we talk about what we personally are geeking out about this week. So, Karima, what is winning your week?
What is winning my week is that I'm in a comic book. I'm actually in a comic, I can finally talk about this, called Marvel's Voices that's coming out next month. It's an anthology that has both prose as well as basically comics in it. I am on the prose portion of the program. I am not the reason why you should be picking this up. It's going to be featuring Hulk and Wolverine, Black Panther, Killmonger, She-Hulk, Black Widow, Ant-Man, and a bunch of people from the Marvel Universe that are basically after House of X and Powers of X. And Marvel's Voices is basically the first comic that is sort of an offshoot of the Marvel's Voices podcast, which friend of the show, Angelique Roche, does over at Marvel. So I was asked if I could write like something for it, and I'm excited to say that I did, and they accepted it, and it's going to be coming out.
Oh, snap.
And I wrote about Isaiah Bradley. Like, a lot of people think that Sam Wilson is the first Black Captain America. There were three before him, and Isaiah Bradley was the first. Actually, all of the three that came before him were related to Isaiah Bradley. It's so funny because there was a reprint early in 2003, but technically it was the 90s, called Red, White, and Black, and it was written by Kyle Baker and drawn by Robert Morales, who's since passed away. It's a fascinating, fascinating story, which later was made canon. And then I was really geeking out this week because I found out that Kyle Baker is also in the book. So I'm like in the and on top of that, a bunch of other people are there too, like, you know, Vita Ayala and Danny Lohr and a bunch of other people that actually we've even spoken to on this podcast, Aletha Martinez and Method Man. I found out yesterday the Method Man's in the book. I know this. So wow. I'm in a book with Method Man and Kyle Baker and Aletha Martinez. So I feel important now.
You are so much cooler than me.
Just this week.
No, that's very cool.
It is very cool.
I'm really excited.
Yeah, it is. Actually, I can say, look, I did that. I believe they're trying to set up some type of signing here in New York. So I will let everybody know Of course, everybody here is invited.
Can we do like a separate signing just privately between you and me? Like, can I just bring one in and you can sign it? Do I have to go to an event?
I was going to say,
is this where
like,
we are now in our relationship? Now you're too big.
I'm not too big. You can listen. If I get Method Man to come, will you show up?
Well, sure. Get Method Man for the podcast, man. Let's talk to Method Man.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Yeah,
I will try. I have to ask Angelique on that. She's got dibs.
All right.
But yeah, that was what I was geeking out about. So it was really, really a lot of fun. And then yes, of course, Picard and all the things. What are you geeking out about?
I am geeking out about, I didn't have a chance to really digest a lot of other pop culture this week, but I had a very special opportunity to talk to a couple of guys who have been in the genre space for a while and actually are doing something that we are going to be reporting on later. To end the mystery, I talked to Aidan Gillen and Neil McDonough, two of the actors from Project Blue Book on the History Channel, or on History, I guess it's just History now.
Gotcha.
In anticipation of the upcoming season, we had a chance to do an interview, and I have to tell you, after seasons and seasons of Game of Thrones, I don't trust anything Aidan Gillen says. It's just sitting in a room with him, I'm just like, he's lying to me, and what is going on? What is the conspiracy? No,
it's like
I'm kidding.
I've been hurt.
I should not say that. He was a very, very nice guy, very obviously very different from Littlefinger, which goes to show you that he was acting. and we had the chance to talk about the upcoming season of Project Boo Book. And I've also been a fan of both of these guys. I've seen them in multiple things. Aidan Gillen is also in a favorite movie of mine, Sing Street. So that was kind of cool. We had a chance to talk afterwards. But yeah, and just talked a lot for a long time about aliens and, you know, the history of the actual history behind the Project Blue Book show. This season, the show has already made no bones about the fact that they are going to be tackling Roswell and Area 51, two of the biggest and most explored to date alien enthusiast type of things. So neither one participated in the raid on Area 51, as far as I know. Mm-hmm. But again, they could have been covering the whole thing up. So who knows? But it was a very good interview, and they were very cool guys. And you're going to get to hear that in a special episode of this podcast, which will be going live very shortly after this one does. And then you can check out a lot more Project Blue Book stuff on our Project Blue Book podcast, hosted by Sci-Fi Wire's own Tara Bennett.
Oh, that's awesome.
Where she will be going. It's the official podcast of Project Blue Book, which is actually pretty cool, that we do with History as a collaborative thing. And so we'll be going deep on the next season, episode by episode, and talking to people behind the show and stuff like that. So it was a really good chance to, you know, I don't get to do a ton of interviews these days because of my editorial duties.
Oh, yeah.
Duties, but not duties. That's a whole other story. But
keep it together, producer. Keep it together.
I know. But but no, so it was cool to sit down with these two guys who have been in this business for a while and talk about their approach to what is some pretty fantastical subject matter and how they try to ground it in realism, which is always a challenge, I think, on the acting and creative side. So check out that bonus episode of this podcast for that interview, and then check out the Project Blue Book podcast when the next season arrives.
Awesome.
Cool. So that is what we are geeking out about. Let's talk about some news.
Okay.
Before we get into the trek of it all, let's talk about Star Wars.
This Obi-Wan thing is making me kind of nervous.
I know.
I'm very excited that Obi-Wan is in his own show with Ewan McGregor, but now they're cutting it short and they sent the crew home.
Yeah, so here's the deal. There is an Obi-Wan show in production for Disney+. It was slated for 6 episodes. Deborah Chow, who directed several great episodes of The Mandalorian, is on board. Ewan McGregor is on board. Things seem to be great. And then this week, news comes out that the show has been shut down, basically, which doesn't mean it has been canceled. I should say that. Like, I think if you don't know the industry nomenclature, shutdown just means they've halted the production process, which was like kind of steamrolling forward, and they're going to basically take a step back. They're going to cut it down from 6 episodes to 4, and they threw out the entire script.
Here's my question. Did an actress leave or
no,
actor leave?
No, Deborah Chow and Ewan McGregor are still both on board.
Okay.
So that's the good news. You know, whether it getting cut from 6 to 4 is episodes is good or bad, who knows? You know, I think sometimes less is more,
mm-hmm.
and that might make it more just like a really long movie. But they are starting from scratch from the script. And I don't know if this is true, but the rumor was that what's in the script was basically Obi-Wan helping out a young Luke and Leia, and the thought was that that was too close to The Mandalorian.
Mm.
You know, it's like, here's this lone guy helping out kids and whatever. And so, again, that's a rumor. I don't know how true that is. That is where that was. And so now they're starting from square one. And I got to tell you, man, after all of the crap that has been going on with Star Wars for so long, and it seems like that house was not in order, The Mandalorian happened.
And it was fine.
And it was great. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
And everything seemed to be going, it's like, okay, whatever's happening at the movies, Disney has found a way to do Star Wars that works, which is on Disney Plus as a miniseries or a limited series like The Mandalorian. Great. Let's do Obi-Wan. Let's do Cassian Andor. And now all of a sudden, here we are with more behind the scenes, you know, whatever, kerfuffle. It just makes it, I don't know about the state of Star Wars right now. It's really, it's strange. It's like they can't seem to get out of their own way in a way.
Here's the thing. It's so weird because when they said that basically Ewan McGregor and the director are still on board, I was like, oh, maybe somebody got hurt. And the reason why my brain went there was because Cowboy Bebop, all of that, the whole shoot, they had to send everybody home from New Zealand because one of the lead characters got injured. And so I thought, okay, well, you know, they'll come back. But then when they were like, nope, throwing out the script, starting over. And I thought it was weird because I'm like, okay, it's not tying to anything. Rebels is ending. The movies are basically Rise of Skywalker is done. I'm not saying we're not going to have any more Star Wars movies. But I'm like, is there a TV universe that they're trying to build and something happened? Like, and I'm the reason why I think they went from 6 to 4 was because they know that they're scrambling. They still have the dates that they have to drop.
I think that's the thing. Given that you entirely control the means of distribution, if they had to delay it, I don't think it would be the biggest deal in the world. They didn't say why they dropped it from 6 to 4, which is another interesting thing. But I think the idea of a 4-episode, like a 4-hour miniseries, is fine. It's basically like a small, like an XL movie, a supersized movie, you know, and that you just digest in parts. And so that's great. If the story is good and it's just 4 hours long, there's no reason it has to be any longer. You know, it doesn't say anything good or bad about the quality of the end product. I think it's weird that they got as far along as they did.
Yeah.
When the scripts, you know, were not, when it ended up being, well, the problem is the script doesn't work. It's like, didn't you know that when they first submitted the script for this?
Well, that's why I thought somebody either got hurt or left the show. Like, so maybe the script wasn't right to begin with, and they kept pushing and pushing and pushing, and then finally, whatever producer left. I'm making this up, guys. I have no idea. I'm just saying, if this was in terms of rumor, if somebody high up left and they were like, fine, and I'm taking my people with me,
yeah,
that might include all of the script writers, you know? So I don't know. I think we'll find out over the next few weeks. Yeah, but we're going to end up with a 4 to 6 hour movie series.
Yeah.
Great.
I mean, I think that's a great way to do it, you know? Like, you can't...
We're all watching Mandalorian anyway, so...
I know.
Let's just put Obi-Wan in Mandalorian.
And you just hope... I hope it turns out well, because it's like, okay, the Mandalorian, like I said, it established a certain thing. They can do a live-action show, execute it successfully. People had some mixed feelings on whether it was great or whether it was just good, but very few people I knew said it was...
It's because of that tracker instrument, like the one that could find something across the room or across the galaxy.
Yeah.
That was the problem. The remote control from hell.
But very few people I know said it was bad.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I do know. I mean, well, you know, they're on Reddit.
Listen, it's the internet. Someone's always going to think something's bad. But I would say...
But the majority of people I know liked it too.
Right. The general consensus was that it was good to great.
Yeah.
Which has not been the reaction to anything Star Wars since maybe Rebels... while back.
I mean, it's funny. Yeah, everything else has been really...
Definitely not to a
polarizing
movie.
Yeah, the movie, all the movies have been very polarizing. Like, people love it or they hate them. Like,
right.
I saw another argument on Twitter this week about how Rogue One was, like, one of the best Star Wars movies ever made.
Right.
And that person was, like, dragged up and down the timeline.
Yeah, I mean, I think the last live-action Star Wars thing before Mandalorian everyone agreed on was Empire Strikes Back, honestly. Because there are plenty of people who hate Jedi.
Exactly. It's really funny. I think Empire Strikes Back is the only thing that universally, young, old, knowing the first thing you watched was the animation or the movies, everybody seems to agree that Empire...
Right.
Right.
And so the hope was, you know, okay, the Mandalorian happened. It seemed like they got their feet under them, and can they build on that? And I still hope that they can. You know, it's, again, they hadn't really gotten into production. This isn't like a Solo situation where we've already gone down the road of starting to shoot things and it's just not working. It's just like, okay, the scripts weren't what we wanted. Let's retool. And I think that's a smart choice if you're not happy with what's there. I just hope that the end result ends up being good.
Maybe, and like I said, maybe they're going to change things up and retcon things, like Clone Wars is apparently doing.
Right. So speaking of Clone Wars, excellent segue, Karima.
I try.
That's why you're in books and I'm not. This is the thing. Anyway, so we had a new trailer for the next season of Clone Wars, the final season of Clone Wars.
The Jedi and the Republic will die.
Now, I'm not watching the show, so before people in the comments start like, what is he saying? I did not know it was that big a deal to see Padme pregnant in the thing, because I'm like, she was pregnant in the movie.
All right,
well,
so this is the thing.
Before he killed her.
Yeah,
but.
So this is one of the things that everybody's kind of talking about. The trailer is action-packed all the way through. It's got a lot of cool stuff. You know, Ahsoka and Darth Maul facing off, which is great.
Which everybody wanted, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's going to be an awesome scene. But there's a quick shot of Anakin talking basically via hologram to Padme.
It's a video call. It's a FaceTime.
Yeah,
and
she's like cradling her stomach, right? Her pregnant belly.
Yeah, she's clearly pregnant. It's not like she just had some burgers.
Does not jibe with what we know or what we were shown happened in Revenge of the Sith.
Okay, so help me out. Where is Rebel supposed to lie in the story, in the timeline?
Well, Clone Wars. We were talking about Clone
Wars.
So Clone Wars. It's between, I think it's between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith.
Okay, now I understand. She's supposed to be dead.
No, she dies at the end of Revenge of the Sith.
Okay.
So it's between Clone Wars is before Revenge, or not Clone Wars, Attack of the Clones is before Revenge of the Sith. So it's like,
Attack of the Clones is
the start of the Clone Wars in the Star Wars universe. And then Clone Wars, the cartoon, basically takes us through the Clone Wars. Because when we pick up in Revenge of the Sith, the Clone Wars have been going on for a while. Anakin is now a decorated soldier and general, etc. And this fills in that gap. That scene fits into this whole timeline, I don't know. And it stirred up a lot of conversation. I feel like most, that never happens. You know, like all these animated series that have been done, all the comics, they really go out of their way to not contradict
the movies,
things
or
from the
books,
movies, which are especially, you know, the George Lucas films, which are like the Bible. And here we have something that at least at first blush seems like it does. Now, who knows?
And they were so pissed off they shut down Obi-Wan. No, I'm kidding.
Exactly.
I have no idea.
Exactly. No, and then listen, we don't know what the context of that scene is. We don't know where it fits. We don't know if it's a flash forward, a flashback, a dream sequence. Who the hell knows?
You know, it's like Marvel, they're teasing us. It never happened. It's not going to be in the show, and they're just doing it to make us mad.
That's exactly right. Yeah. I hope so. I hope that's the
strategy. I'm staring at you, Iron Man 3. Staring at you.
So we don't know what that means, but it was one of those things where you're watching and you're like, what?
Okay, now I understand that. Yeah. Because I just thought, oh, okay, cool. Because I'm not that far. So I didn't know. Okay.
So anyway, but that, I mean, that's one small thing in an overall epic trailer. If you were not excited, although I will say, I think most people who were excited for Clone Wars, the final season, were already excited for Clone Wars, the final season. It's, if you're in, you're in. And it's a lot to catch up on if you're not. So I don't know if this trailer would have moved the needle for someone who had never seen Clone Wars before. And it's like, oh, I have to check this. It's great. Let me go watch 7 seasons of, you know.
I am catching up. But I don't think it's made me go, all right, stop everything and watching the whole thing.
Well,
I
actually really. So this is the funny story, is that Brian Silliman, host of Sci-Fi Wire's Job of the Pod, and I were in a play together in 2013.
Really?
And
I never knew.
Oh, yeah.
Did you sing?
No, not in that one. But anyway, yes, I have a long and illustrious career in a bunch of theater that nobody saw.
I know. I didn't know that. So, but I'm just saying that I think it's great that you and Brian actually acted together. Because Brian did. I didn't know. I knew you both were actors, is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
I never knew your paths or your stages crossed.
More than once. So anyway, but in that play, it was called Breaking Kayfabe by Tamar Underwood, and it was about professional wrestling. And Brian was playing the Paul Heyman sort of like over-the-top announcer/owner of the league character.
I can't see him doing that.
He was amazing.
I have no idea how he pulled
that
off.
We were talking backstage, and this was pre, you know, new movies and everything, and I was in a phase that I think is familiar to a lot of Star Wars fans, which is the prequels had really
angry?
Kind of...
I'm just kidding.
But the prequels had really kind of killed my fandom of Star Wars a little bit. I was like, listen, I'll always love the original movies, but I wouldn't go around saying I'm a Star Wars fan.
No, I did too. After Jar Jar, I was out.
And that and the extended universe books. And before anyone gets mad at me, there were some good ones. I love the Thrawn trilogy and all that stuff, but I think there was also a lot of crap out there that was just...
I think Thrawn is the only one I've even read. I haven't
the quality
read
varied widely. Let me put it that way. And after an encounter with some expanded universe books that I did not enjoy, plus the prequels, I was kind of done. And Brian Silliman sat me down and he was like, "Watch Clone Wars.
Ah,
it will change everything." And he was right. Like, it's great. It's a great series. It really, this was the start of Dave Filoni just really nailing, expressing that he can understand and nail the tone that made people love Star Wars in the first place. And so, yeah, Clone Wars brought me back into the fold. Now, how I feel about it now, based on all the toxicity and anger and all that stuff, I don't know. But at the time, it rekindled my love
of the franchise. I mean, honestly, you're not watching the show with all these other people. You're watching it yourself. So if you like it, you're obviously still a fan. So that's good.
So I think it's great that they're getting the chance to cap it off here. I encourage anyone who, if you've never seen any of Clone Wars and you do enjoy the Star Wars, watch it. It's great. It's really, really good. You know, there's a reason that, you know, Ahsoka Tano is now quite possibly one of the most popular, if not the most popular Star Wars character there is.
Yeah. I just need to see her live action. I want to see her.
I know. Did you see the Twitter leak the quote unquote leak that went out a couple weeks ago where it was like, here's the cast for The Mandalorian season 2, and it was Rosario Dawson as Ahsoka Tano?
Yeah, I did, but we don't know whether or not that's real
or not. I know. It's so sketchy.
But we have seen her people on Mandalorian.
Yes.
So they have teased.
The Twi'leks, yes.
Yeah, the Twi'leks exist. So. Yeah.
So it's so sketchy and who knows, but man, that would be cool. Anyway. That is Clone Wars.
Yeah, when it comes out, we're basically, I know, between Brian Silliman and Preeti Chopra, who's also been on the show, there's literally nothing I'm not going to know about this show. I want to like watch it and watch their Twitter feed because they both key smash every time the show comes on.
Yeah, I know. Brian especially is like, if he's the first person I'm going to call when that happens. But all right, so that's Star Wars. Now let's move into another franchise.
Star Trek.
Well, actually, we're also going to talk about The Martian. As mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, I had the opportunity to sit down with Will Wheaton, geek icon, former...
The next generation.
Former ensign on the Enterprise.
Leslie.
And audible hero. He has narrated books such as Ready Player One. And he is back to do.
He's
another
done
version.
A lot more narration than I realized.
I know.
Even animated characters. I was in his IMDb. Like, wow. Like he's done a lot.
Yeah.
Since because a lot of people thought he fell off after Next Generation, and it's like, nope. He's just making his money without having to go to makeup.
Yeah. So, which hey, it's good living.
Yep. Podcast. We love him. And speaking of all the animation that he's done, I thought there was already an Audible book for Martian. Am I wrong?
There was indeed. Okay. There was a previous one.
But they wanted him to do it.
Yeah, I think there were some rights considerations in terms of issuing a new one, but also, Will Wheaton being such a distinctive voice in the space and a big fan of the book, and Andy Weir and him having had a previous connection through I can't remember the name of it now, but the streaming gaming, tabletop gaming thing that Will Wheaton did. He had Andy Weir as a guest, and so they already knew each other.
Gotcha.
It was a match too perfect to pass up, it seems.
Gotcha. Did he talk at all about The Next Generation?
And absolutely.
What was his favorite episode?
Well, we get into that in the interview, which you'll get to hear, but it was mostly just like about, I wanted to connect it very much to Patrick Stewart and Jean-Luc Picard, because obviously Picard has arrived on CBS All Access, and we'll be talking about that after the interview. And I wanted to get his take as someone who was both a fan, he's a fan of the show and of Trek and everything like that, and also lived it and got to stand opposite this guy who's become an icon.
Space dad.
Yeah, I mean, no, such an icon in both that franchise and just generally speaking in the genre space. So it was really cool to get his perspective on the types of things that Patrick Stewart brings to the table as an actor, but that also Picard brings to the conversation as a character. And really couched also a lot of it in terms of what's going on in the world today and why the time is right for someone like Jean-Luc Picard to return to our screens.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So that is the interview that you will get to hear right now. Hi, Will. Thanks so much for joining us here on Who Won the Week.
It's my pleasure.
Let's talk about The Martian. You had a connection to this book as a fan, I'm guessing, before anything about narrating a new version of it came up.
That's true. I read The Martian in hardback. I feel like I read it the first week it came out. And I feel like I read it in as fast as I could. I have never read a book where I wanted the characters to be real as badly as I wanted them to be real in The Martian, because I really wanted to meet them.
What was it about, you know, there's a wide range of science fiction and speculative fiction out there. What was it about, other than the characters that were in the book, what was it about The Martian that really drew you in as a reader?
It felt very plausible. I felt like I was reading something that I could experience as a news consumer in my lifetime. And I loved that. And I loved how much I cared about all the characters. I loved their camaraderie and their commitment to each other. I loved Mark Watney's humor and his absolute refusal to admit defeat. I don't know. I loved everything about it.
Having watched the conversation that you had with Andy, you mentioned that you have friends at JPL with whom you talked about this book. Can you talk about what those conversations were like? And you know, were you just bouncing like, is this real? How close are we to this type of thing? Or were there other elements there?
My friend Bobak was the flight director for the Mars Science Lab mission, and we talked about it a lot. He told me, I mean, you know, other than, and Andy has talked about this as well, like the big dust storm that is kind of the inciting event for the entire narrative is not physically possible on Mars. But other than that, everything that goes on in that book is scientifically accurate and absolutely the way that things would go down. You know, our conversations were sort of about like, all of this feels so real. I think it's one of the reasons that I felt like these characters were real. And I felt like I could meet these characters. They felt like people I have known, you know, because of working on Star Trek over the years, I've had the incredible privilege of meeting more than one astronaut. The way that Andy created these characters, the way he drew these characters, they felt very real. And a lot of the conversations I had with people when I was reading that book were centered around all these characters are, how exciting the narrative is, and how compelling the story is. And that was I had those conversations with all of my friends. So when Audible came to me and said, you know, we want you to do this book, like I couldn't believe that I was getting the opportunity to do it, because one, there was already a recording of the book that is extraordinary. And there was an issue with the intellectual property rights or copyright or something. I don't quite understand exactly what it is. But Audible had an opportunity to do a new version of it, and they chose me. Like, I was just floored. I was so honored to be asked to do something that I'm so excited about, something that I view as kind of like prestige narration. Like, I couldn't say yes fast enough.
So, I mean, you mentioned that you're in kind of illustrious company when it comes to bringing this story to life. I mean, we had the movie, Matt Damon playing Mark Watney, and also, as you mentioned, the previous narrated version of the book. So going in, did you take anything from those elements, or were you trying to bring something new that was specifically you to the narration of this?
Whenever I do any audiobook narration, my primary goal is to be faithful to the author's intention and to communicate dramatically, using my skills and experience as an actor, what the writer's intention is. And I do that with everything that I work on. So with The Martian, because I was already familiar with the material, because I was already a fan, because I had spent a lot of time with those characters, I really just, the biggest challenge for me was to stay out of my own way and just let the work happen.
What, I guess, did you have any interaction with Andy prior to recording in terms of picking his brain about anything? Was that something, is that a part of your process?
Because I was a fan of the book, when we were doing my show Table Talk with Geek and Sundry, I reached out to Andy and asked him if he would come be a guest on the show, because I was just a fan. And he said yes, and he came down from Northern California and played a game with me and Mayim Bialik, and it was really fun. We didn't talk about the nuts and bolts of the material too much then, because we were working on a show at the time. When I was hired by Audible to do the narration, the day before, I got this email from Audible, and they said, Andy really wants to have a conversation with you before before we start recording. And I was like, okay, that's great. I would love to have that conversation. Maybe he has some notes or some reminders. So I called Andy from the booth and I said, hey, I understand you want to talk with me. And he goes, oh, that's weird. Audible said you wanted to talk to me. So it was obviously very important to the producers that we connect beforehand, but we were already connected. So there really wasn't anything that I was nervous about. But I'm very fortunate to narrate for Andy. I've done a ton of narration for John Scalzi and for Cory Doctorow, and they're all my friends. So it's really great when I'm in the booth. If I have a question about a scene or a character, I can just grab my phone and have the answer from the author in a matter of minutes.
Mm. Do you do other forms of research going in? Like, for example, something like this, you're talking about NASA press conferences, the way astronauts talk, et cetera. Is that something where you go out and seek out archival footage or any other kind of in-depth background before you go into the booth?
You're giving me way more credit than I deserve for my creative process. I haven't done that. But in a way, I absolutely do that when I'm doing my preparation. You know, like all actors, I draw on my sense memories. I've watched astronauts give press conferences. I've watched NASA administrators give press conferences. I know what they sound like. Mm-hmm. And I just did my best as an actor to act like I was one of those people.
It's like that Ian McKellen speech from Extras, right? You know, just imagine what it's like to be the person and then pretend.
It is as simple and as complicated as that.
Exactly. Exactly. So what is it about? I mean, you have a career as an actor. You've done stuff as a presenter. What is it about a project like this, an audiobook specifically, that appeals to you?
I love it. It lets me combine two of my favorite things in the world. I absolutely love to read, and I absolutely love narration and voice work. I've had the tremendous privilege of working on some really great animated series the last few years, and I really enjoy it. There's something fun and challenging and unique about only using my voice to bring someone else's creative work to life. And it's super satisfying, and there's nothing else like it. And I'm extremely lucky to work with Gabriel DeCure, a magnificent director. We have won tons of awards together. We've done best-selling books together. I'm just really grateful to be part of a creative team that keeps getting these great opportunities to put our version of this work into the world.
And obviously, Mark Watney's the big draw from a character standpoint, right? Here he's got a lot of the funny lines. He's the one facing the biggest crisis. Who was the character other than Watney that either provided the biggest challenge or who you were most excited to represent going into this recording?
I don't think I have a satisfying answer for that question. I mean, I give every character the same level of work and the same level of commitment and the same level of performance as I give any other character. Because if anybody, you know, if there's any weakness, it really tends to show through. Mark being such a strong narrative character and having such a clear voice, I guess what was fun for me and was a little bit of a challenge for me were these moments in the book. And they tend to come sort of in the third act of the book, where the narrative shifts from his first person narrative to a third person narrative. And I had a lot of fun changing my vocalization and changing the way that I heard in my head that particular section of the book.
All right. So shifting gears a bit from The Martian, obviously this is a big week in the Star Trek world with the premiere of Picard on CBS All Access. You're hosting Ready Room, which is the post-show show. Can you talk a bit about that and kind of what drew you to that project?
So a few months ago, CBS got in touch and asked me if I would be interested in hosting it. It's a wonderful opportunity. I am so excited about this show. I have been excited about this show since the day it was announced. And having this opportunity to speak to the creative people involved in making it is really fun for me. the biggest challenge that I have had with Ready Room, we've shot a bunch already. We're going to shoot a bunch more next week. The biggest challenge I have had so far is preventing it from becoming the Chris Farley show where I just sit there and go, remember when you did that thing? It was so cool. Like, because that's kind of how I feel about this stuff. I mean, I guess I'm allowed to talk about the series. You know, I've seen the whole series and it's so good and I'm so excited about it. I'm so happy with it. It did not disappoint me ever, like not even a tiny little bit. And I have a unique perspective and a unique emotional connection to Jean-Luc Picard and to the timeline that he exists in. And when I watch Picard, I watch it in a way that I think maybe only a couple dozen people on this planet are going to watch it. So for me to have the opportunity to be a bit of a bridge between the people who make the show and the people who watch the show, like I kind of land right in the middle of that Venn diagram, so that I have the opportunity to be that voice and be that instrument of access for fans of the show. It's a real privilege and I'm really grateful for it.
So as someone who has been on set with Patrick Stewart working in this role and also watched it from the outside, what do you think from your perspective it is about his portrayal of Picard that has made the character so timeless? I mean, you know, Kirk was a huge bar to clear in terms of Star Trek captain popularity, and I would say, you know, we're up there if not past it. So what do you think it is that makes that so that depictions resonate so well?
I cannot answer that question objectively. I can answer that question from my deeply meaningful personal experience with the actor and the character over 30 years. I love Jean-Luc Picard because he embodies the very best of humanity. He is kind. He is honorable. He does the right thing when it is not the easy thing. He is wise. He's an incredible leader. He is an inspirational figure. And in this show, to see him 30 years after he was in command of the Enterprise, to see how he has changed and to see how Starfleet and the Federation have changed is extremely satisfying. There were, you know, when we were new, there were all these differences between Kirk and Picard, obviously, and there are endless fan debates about that. I think everyone's personal preference is completely valid. I think the biggest difference between them is that Kirk is very impulsive and sort of like fiery, and Picard is methodical, but they both have the strength of their convictions, which is what makes them such a good leader.
And then what would you say that Patrick Stewart specifically, I mean, again, subjectively is entirely fine as someone who is processing this stuff individually. What do you think Patrick Stewart brings to the role that is distinctly his?
Patrick has a quiet confidence and elegance about him. He lifts up all the people around him. He lifted us all up as actors. He made me a better actor just by existing. By working with him, I learned more about what I was doing. I learned more about my job. I learned all of the things, the skills that I use with audiobooks now. I learned some of those just from being around him. At Picard's core, he is a good, honorable man who always does the right thing. And I feel like Patrick is very much that same person. And he's only chosen to reveal that aspect of himself publicly in the last few years. But that's the person I knew. There was not a lot of difference. Actually, let me take that back. The significant difference between Patrick and Picard is Patrick has a tremendous sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's extremely disarming. And it's kind of cherubic, his sense of humor. I really enjoy it a lot. And I can't really see Picard cracking the jokes that Patrick cracks, but all of it goes together to like really inspiring the best out of the people around him, whether it's Picard and the people that he is or the people he is traveling with, or that's Patrick and the actors and crew he's working with.
Oh, very cool. Well, I have this theory that one of the reasons that the time is right for a Picard Star Trek show is because of the time that we live in right now, and a lot of the uncertainty and kind of dystopian stuff that we're seeing manifest.
You mean because the world is on fire and literal Nazis are a thing again?
Yeah, I was trying to put that more obliquely, but absolutely.
like that's those things.
Yeah.
I'm working on a presentation that it is called "We Need Star Trek Now More Than Ever." If you look at the historical parallels between now and the late 1960s, especially 1968, we need science fiction that holds up a mirror to the world we live in right now. And Patrick has talked about how a big part of the story arc of the first season of Star Trek Picard has to do with people not honoring their commitments, and people and powerful people who know better turning their backs on people who need them and abandoning people for expediency. We see so much of that happening in the world right now. Like all good science fiction, like the best science fiction, this show exists on multiple levels. On one level, we are spending some time with a character who we absolutely love. We are meeting new characters who we are going to come to love, who are going to endure for years, just like all of our next generation characters have. And on another level, we are seeing a science fiction representation of what's happening in our real world right now. And it is challenging us to do something about it.
There it was.
No, that was really cool. I agree with some of his stuff about basically Picard versus Stewart, but we'll get into that when we talk about the show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And just, you know, it was cool to hear... It's just cool to hear the things that, you know, the story about Tapestry and how that affected someone who had trauma that they had to deal with in their past. And, you know, he talks a lot about that in terms of like the best science fiction speaks to stuff that we're going through right now.
Yeah.
So the fact that Picard is the type of show it is important. And we will get into that and our thoughts on Picard right after this break.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What a great break.
That was awesome.
I feel completely broken.
Oh, God.
But, yeah. And also, there was a break in the show. That's just my personal issues.
Full disclosure, we've seen more than one episode, but we're not going to spoil it for everybody. We're going to talk about the premiere, which everybody should have seen by now, of Picard.
Right.
First of all, I know you said, even before this, you said you liked it, but what did you like about it? About this?
Well, first of all, I should not say I really liked it.
Okay, and let's pause. Let's write down the day and the time.
Oh, come on. I really liked a lot of things that we've talked about.
Just joking.
Yeah. Jeez.
But I'm glad you really, really liked it. Because I was
left
like,
Mr. Negative behind in 2019.
Yeah.
Or Negative Man. Negative Man. Sorry, that was me. Yeah.
It's a new year and
that's
a
right.
new fan.
So I'm a huge Next Generation fan. And the interesting thing about this show, and I think some of the reaction to it is my guess, is that this show is so different tonally than Next Generation. It does not feel like Next Generation, I would say, at all, other than the fact that Patrick Stewart is at its center.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I think this character is great. I think the way directions it takes him are great. I think that a lot of the connections that it draws between where Picard is now and what's going on in the world or the galaxy at the time versus where it was 20 odd years ago, 30 years ago, are interesting. And I think it does, I think it's a very timely show.
It is, and I'm surprised that it is.
Yeah, as Will said, I think it speaks a lot to kind of some of the things that we as humans and civilization are going through right now with the failure of institutions that we all thought were kind of infallible, and you know, the different ways of treating certain people who are different than us and all that kinds of things. And we'll get into more of that, but I just think it's really well done. And it's, a lot of people are complaining about the pace. I didn't have a problem with it. I like that it takes its time a little bit.
Well, yeah. And that's that. I heard a lot of people say that, and it's really funny because the common complaint on Netflix and even a lot of the other streaming services, even when the first show or the first few shows of any science fiction show come out, everybody always complains that the first two episodes are slow or the first episode is slow. But in Star Trek's case, they're trying to create a show around, like, the last time we saw Picard on screen was 18 years ago in Nemesis, in the movie.
Right.
So, like, there's a bunch of people that weren't born. That, you know what I mean? Like, they're trying to get a couple of generations, no pun intended, to like this show. And I think that they did that. Now, sometimes, yes, it does feel a little over-explainy, but I try and, like, take my moment and go, wait, there's people watching this that don't know the difference between a Romulan and a Vulcan. I don't know, you know, that there was this war and what happened, why. No, that's not Data in the drawer.
Right.
I think the thing that was new was talking about Mars, I think.
Well, and so here's the thing. This movie, interesting, or this movie, I should say, this series.
It feels like a movie, though. It looks like a movie.
Yeah, it links back to the original Prime timeline, right?
Yeah.
Because the a big thing that it sets up, and this is a minor spoiler because it's dealt with in the very beginning of the show, you know, why Picard is no longer in Starfleet has to do with the destruction of Romulus, which we saw in the J.J. Abrams film, and which was the, you know, caused Spock to travel back in time and split off the different timeline, et cetera. And this just links into that.
Right, and Eric Bana.
Yeah, the destruction.
The Hulk was the angry Romulan.
That's right. And the destruction of Romulus in this show is a known fact. It is a thing that happened. Picard, you know, wanted to lead a refugee effort to save the Romulans, basically, and the Federation was like, we don't like those guys, and so that's why he's no longer in the Federation. So it's just the threads that it draws back to various different incarnations of Trek and the way we've seen it displayed are really, I think, really cool and well integrated. It's a lot more than I expected. There's a lot of references, and, like, you know, Bruce Maddox's name comes up very soon.
That's, yeah, Bruce Maddox. And for those of you who don't know, Bruce Maddox was in the second or third season of the Next
Measure
Generation.
Measure of a Man.
Right, where he basically tried to take Data.
Right, right. So he's a scientist who is into cybernetics and artificial life, and basically tries to claim Data is not a person. They hold a trial. Picard on one side is the lawyer and Riker on the other side. And it's a really fun episode that explores, you know, Data and who he is, but not, it's just funny. It's like, if I would look back and be like, what plots are they going to pull from to do a new Picard show? Like, plucking that one.
Yeah. They plucked episode, like, instead of taking, like, the whole curtain down, they took, like, a thread.
Yeah.
And they said, we're going to go with this one.
But it's cool. It's cool. I really like it. And it's something that it raised, you know, Data's very existence raised a lot of questions that Next Gen did explore here and there, but they never really got into the because no one could replicate Data or the positronic matrix that made him what he was. Wow, I'm really getting into the geeky stuff here, and they never really went beyond that. It was just kind of a known thing. Listen, you can't make another Data unless you're his creator, and that's all there is to it. And that, to me, doesn't factor into, you know, humanity's stubbornness when it comes to breaking technological boundaries that maybe they necessarily shouldn't right off the bat. So that this show allows for that and allows for the idea that, you know, this is a part of this universe that we've never really expanded. And now they expand it is really cool, I think.
What did you think of some of the other characters? We've spoken a lot about
Jean-Luc. Well, so, and you know, there's only so much we can talk about. This is the thing, we talk about the pace, right? The first episode, we don't get a lot of new characters. You know, we meet Allison Pill's doctor, what the heck is her name? Dr.
Agnes
something.
Girardi.
Agnes Girardi. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
you know, we meet some of Picard's, his helpers at the vineyard. But beyond that, it's mostly just his journey to get going, to basically pull himself out of what is basically a retired malaise.
Yeah, he's kind of tired and depressed. And
yeah, I mean, I thought Issa Briones was really, really good as Dodge.
She's Dodge, yeah.
But, you know, I don't want to get into the spoilers yet, but there's, you know, she's tangential to this episode. It's really Patrick Stewart's show. I will say, having seen episodes 2 and 3, some of the characters that we meet in those episodes, mm-hmm. particularly episode 3, I find a lot more compelling than the supporting characters that we see in the first episode.
And here's the thing. When Orla Brady showed up as one of his quote-unquote helpers at the vineyard, you're not seeing this in the premiere, but I'm like, you don't cast Orla Brady in something and just let her be a helper.
Right.
Because she had a really big part in Into the Badlands.
Yeah.
And fought her ass off. So I was like, oh, something's going to happen, because these two can't just be, just from my perspective, that was just me like, they're not just helpers. They can't be.
Right.
Because I don't know that much about the other actor, the guy that's playing her husband, but I know Orla Brady is not, she's not a wallflower. So, and there's some great stuff that you guys get to see with her coming soon. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. There was a lot I liked. There was, and I saw the same, there's people online that were asking me this question, and yes, I did have a problem with the fact that the first person to die in the show was a black man. But being that the director of that episode is a black woman, as well as she's also a co-producer, I'm referring to Hannah Culpepper, I am going to give it the benefit of the doubt in that when the same thing happened on Star Trek Discovery and they pulled a Kill the Gay, the first thing the showrunner said, it's not what you think. And right. We were like, but he's dead, right? And they were like, but it's not what you think. And I'm talking about Wilson Cruz's character.
Mm-hmm.
But then he came back.
Right.
So that is why I'm going to give it the benefit of the doubt, because in 2020, we can't still be killing. Black man still can't be the first person to die. So for those of you who are asking me all that online, that is my feeling on that. But I do like, outside of that, how diverse the cast is. I also like the fact that the one thing that I find very interesting is what you said earlier, is that it's not a perfect Starfleet. Starfleet isn't perfect. Jean-Luc's decisions weren't all considered perfect. I remember Patrick Stewart saying he would not come back and do a show like this for years. He said, yeah, I'm done. But then he said last year on the San Diego Comic-Con stage, he said, I came back because I read the script. And he was like in tears talking about the script.
Yeah.
And I think it's because somebody finally wrote a Picard that's like Patrick Stewart. So Patrick Stewart off camera is very philanthropic, is very talking about causes and things that are very, very important right now. And I think the fact that they were able to pull Picard down a little bit from his pedestal and make him more of a, hey, you know what? This was not as good as I thought it was. I think that's why Patrick Stewart is back.
Yeah.
Because I think that he was, I think his issue was one of that problem with the utopia,
right,
that the start, that the Next Generation was, which was one reason why I was more of a Deep Space Nine fan.
Well, and that's, I mean, you chalk that up to Gene Roddenberry.
Yeah.
And you know, all credit and love to Gene for creating this whole thing. But the reason Deep Space Nine was able to do the shades of gray that it was and start to delve into serial storytelling, which was a new thing for a Trek show at the time, was because Gene Roddenberry had passed away and was no longer in charge, because those were things that he was diehard on.
Yeah.
As the creator. So if you are someone who only knows or who is in love with the Next Generation, this is going to feel different. It's going to feel weird. It's a modern TV show. It's very serial. You can't just pick up any Next Gen episode you could just watch and beginning and end, you're done. This is incredibly serial. It's shot like very differently, like a cinematic TV show, like you said. It's a modern quote unquote prestige TV show with characters from a show that was treated very, very differently. So I could see that being very jarring. And you're like, you know, in a Next Gen episode, the first 5 minutes, you're kind of aware of what the crisis is and what you have to do, because that's all the time they had.
Yeah.
You know, in the first act, you have to get at what's out there and then get to solving it. And here, the first episode is very, very much set up.
Yeah.
You know, we take our time learning why Picard is out of Starfleet, what were the circumstances that led to him leaving, where is everybody now? Like, where is he? Where is Starfleet? where is humanity in terms of its pursuit of technology, et cetera. Again, I appreciated that, but I understand why some people are thinking it's slow.
Well, also, for the people that, because I remember last year when Discovery dropped, people were like, okay, this is very dark for Star Trek.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, but sort of like Picard was like, hold my beer. So they're both, I would say Discovery, where it started, was much darker than where Picard is starting.
Yes.
But they are in the same house. You know what I mean? They're on different floors, but they're in the same house. I think Picard's floor has a little bit more light.
Yeah.
But they're definitely in the same house because this CBS All Access version of Star Trek is definitely leaning into more of reality-based and like cinematic storytelling. There's people cussing on this show.
Right. Well, and that's what I think it's interesting because the original Trek and Next Gen were born out of Roddenberry's idealism, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, here, let me show you, everything's hard right now. Let me show you what humans can be. You know, we can be better than this. We can reach the stars and put our diplomatic face on and go solve problems that way, et cetera. That's one way of approaching, you know, but it had these little episodes like, okay, so we've reached this planet where the black aliens don't like the white aliens, but we're not like that anymore, you mm-hmm. know? This show is very much like, hey, we live in, like I've said before, we live in a world where institutions that we had faith in for a long time are failing us and leaders are not leading whatever side you're on. I think we can all agree that there's a crisis of leadership in the world right now in terms of honorable and doing the right thing, even though it's hard, et cetera. Putting Picard up as a mirror to that is a really interesting way to do it because as Will Wheaton said when I talked to him, it's like this is a character who in the show has always represented the best of humanity. You know, he's wise, he only resorts to violence when he absolutely needs to. He's compassionate and does the right thing even when it's difficult. And I think that seeing that character thrust into the type of world we live in now where Starfleet, this thing that was held up as kind of the paragon of human achievement almost, is rotten.
It is. And, you know, I think also from an actor's standpoint, at one point, I don't think it was in the premiere, it was in another episode that was a little bit later, but, and I'm not going to spoil it, but just in terms of the way Patrick Stewart was acting, I was like, this Picard is like if we took the Next Generation's Picard and Logan's Professor X and put them in a blender.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not here for any more of this nonsense.
Well, and I will say the hard part about it was like, there's some action in episode one and man, can you tell it's not Patrick Stewart.
Not only is it not him, the stunt double is like a foot taller than him. Oh my God.
And I feel because I love Peace Stew.
But he can't Peace Stew. But he can't do that.
No, he's an older guy now.
Like when he was running up the stairs, and he looked like he was out of breath. I don't think that was acting.
Right.
I think it was like, wait.
So I'm hopeful as we move into later episodes, again, this is not a spoiler. We've seen some of this in trailer. He hooks up with other characters. There's a younger kind of pilot guy.
Doesn't literally hook up, guys. Calm down.
Connect. Let me put it that way. And hopefully those will be the people who get to do the action stuff and
yes,
Patrick Stewart will just get to Picard it up.
The crew that he is putting together is very, interesting. Like you said, we've seen this in the trailer. I'm excited to see where it goes. I'm also excited to see how they resolve what they're setting up. The data connection is fascinating to me. And and this girl's connection to data is fascinating.
And the other thing, I wish that we had somebody on here who was not that familiar with Star Trek.
Oh, to get there.
Because my thing they've said going in, you don't need to know anything to enjoy Picard. I think that's crazy. The first episode alone has, I would say, like a dozen references to past Trek stuff.
But I don't think you have to know what it is. I think you have to know that it happened. Like, here's the thing. If you don't know about the Romulan War, you do realize that there was something that happened with the Romulans and they blew up Mars and Picard was not happy with it. And that's one of the reasons why he went head to head with Starfleet. Now, does it feel like, would it help with the backstory? Yes. But I think if you're just tangentially looking at it, like, let me check out this show and see what's going on. And the last show you watched Deep Space Nine or something from the Next Generation like 20 years ago, I think you can still understand the universe a little bit. You might not understand the specifics.
And I think it takes more work. I mean,
it does take more work.
Honestly, I went back and Wikipedia'd the J.J. Abrams film with the destruction of Romulus because they drop it in there. They're just like, oh yeah, the Romulan supernova. And while that kind of gets the point across, like understanding exactly what it was and what the circumstances that followed it were.
With Spock and the red
stuff. Yeah, it was something where I just had to go back and refresh my memory. And I'm someone who follows this stuff pretty closely. So I don't know. I kind of disagree. And I don't think that's necessarily a weakness. I just think there's going to be a lot of people going Bruce Maddox and going back and looking that up on you know, memory. What is it? Memory Core Alpha. And,
yeah. And I honestly, well, Bruce Maddox was one that did stump me because I couldn't remember his name. I remember tangentially that show, but right. I didn't remember his name. But I do feel that in future episodes, they've kind of fleshed that out a little bit. But yeah, you could still understand what he does through the other doctor that's there that we talked about. You're sort of seeing his explanations of who he is and what he's done are coming through her. And I think that's why she's on the ship or will be on the ship because she was in the trailer. I guess doctor, ship, ship's doctor.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know. I'm excited. If there's anybody listening to the podcast who's not familiar with Star Trek, who watched Picard, please comment and let us know because we're curious to see what, you know, whether or not you were lost and confused.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And I mean, I think if you know Next Gen pretty well and you've seen all the movies, like I think you will get more out of it maybe because there's that moment of recognition like, ooh, I remember that. And that's a throwback to something. I'm going to go watch Measure of a Man now.
Or you'd be like me with Clone Wars, like not understanding why Padme being pregnant is a problem.
Right, right. And, you know, it's just so different. And again, I'm speaking as someone who hasn't really watched Discovery.
Here's the thing. I feel like they have the same cinematographer.
Yeah.
But it's not the same direction. And Discovery moves a little faster. And I know that's going to sound crazy because one of the things we were saying last year was that Discovery moves slow. Yeah. But compared to Picard, it moves faster. And I definitely think the second season definitely picked up the pace. I need to know when that third season is happening, by the way. So if anybody from CBS is listening, feel free to hit me up in my DMs because I would like to know when Discovery's coming back.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling they're doing this on purpose. They want everybody to get halfway through Picard before they start making everybody also watch Discovery, which I think, here's the thing. If you're going to pay for it, they're both going to be there.
Sure.
So the other thing I'm curious about, and now that I know that Will Wheaton is doing the after show, I got to tune into that because I didn't look for that. I was only looking for the premiere. Yeah. So.
Well, an interesting thing too, this show has already been renewed for a second season. Michael Chabon, the current showrunner, is leaving. And some people might say, ooh, that's, you know, what does that mean? Because usually when the showrunner leaves, it's bad. But they're making a movie out of Cavalier and Clay.
Oh.
Adventures of Cavalier and Clay. And I'm assuming he's going to be slightly busy. And the person who's taking over for season two is Terry Metalis, who was the showrunner for 12 Monkeys on Sci-Fi. And not to, you know, plug the home team, but this is a guy who knows what he's doing.
A little bit.
Yeah.
And
he's a good name. He's a good, it's one of those names where they drop in and you're like, oh, okay. I feel great. I don't feel any fear that this show is going to take a dip. So.
Yeah. And somebody else who's going to be showing up season two is apparently Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah.
Who we found out this week on The View, which I never watch. Somebody had to and I never thought I would be talking about The View on Sci-Fi.
I know. The View gained a whole new audience this week just for this moment alone.
I never thought I'd be saying Joy Behar's name on Sci-Fi. But anyway, actually a fan of the show actually jumped in my DMs and was like, you've got to see this, and sent the thing that The View sent out where Picard was a guest on the show and said, I'm here for two reasons. One, to talk about Picard, and two, to ask Whoopi if she would join us in being in season two. And her reaction was so happy and so genuine. And for those of you who don't remember, she played Guinan. And I think, judging from what we're seeing, he's going to need a little guidance his life.
It's so great. It was such a cool moment on the show, just in general, to see the emotion there. But then as a Star Trek fan, that dynamic of those two together
was great.
Was always so awesome. And it's one of those things where you never, when you hear what Picard is about and kind of, you know, they're bringing in new actors as they have to, you're just like, oh, that's they're never going to make that happen. Whoopi's doing her own thing and whatever. And then to hear it is actually manifesting is really cool. My only other request is that now we get John DeLancey back on board and have Q Picard and Guinan all together, because as we remember,
the trifecta.
Guinan was the only, Q was afraid of her. Yep. And they never really explained why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so maybe.
And it would be great if they brought them both back and she's back to warn Picard, like, Q's coming back. I'm just here to warn you because I couldn't contain him or something.
Man,
you know, that'd be amazing.
I hope there's a Q sighting. That would make me so, so happy. So, but it's interesting. Like, it's like, you know, so far in the three episodes we've seen, it's like the characters from past shows and everything have kind of been cameos or like they touch in here. Or, mm-hmm. You know, it's here. There's a little reference. Hugh is in the show, which is great. That's one of my favorite moments, too, was seeing that character again. Mm-hmm. Because, again, that's a thing where it's like it was two episodes.
Yeah.
You know, where the one where they brought Hugh to the ship and he learned individuality. And then later when we find out that his individuality infected the entire Borg collective. Mm-hmm. And now he's a player in this show that's, you know, 20, 30 years later. If we get a freaking Reg Barclay sighting, I'm going to lose my stuff. So bring back all the tangential characters from the old episodes of Next Gen and put them in this show. I'll be happy. I don't know. I mean, I'm actually kind of surprised at some of the mixed reviews or the mixed to negative reviews this thing has gotten.
The reason why I'm not is because they've only seen one episode and we've seen three.
No, the critics have seen three.
Oh, the critics have seen three.
Yeah, a lot of critics have had the same things we've had.
Is it that they feel like it's too angry or he's too old?
The pace is the one thing I've seen, like universally.
Nobody wants to wait for anything anymore. I feel all old when I say that, but like, it's just, I honestly think for the first three episodes of a brand new show, remember, people said the same thing about Watchmen. I mean, even though Watchmen like jumped right into the war, the pacing of the show after that, telling the story of everything was slower. The pace doesn't bother me as long as I'm getting something in that pacing. For instance, there are wide shots in some of these episodes that are full of Easter eggs.
Right.
And they're necessary. But if you fly by them, you won't catch them.
Yeah.
So I'm also wondering who these seven people are that don't like the show. I just encourage everybody to not worry about the critics. Just watch it yourself. Make your own choice.
Well, and I think the other thing, too, that they do that's really interesting is, you know, the dodge of it all. And, you know, we've seen her in the trailers.
Yes.
And she was set up kind of as the big MacGuffin. We'll get into some spoiler territory here. So if you don't want to know anything at all, you haven't watched the first episode yet, peace out and live long and prosper. And thank you so much for joining us.
Bye.
But, okay, so that's the spoiler warning. So the way that they work things with her to kind of set her up as the you know, the person that Picard has to protect. And then she's dead.
Yeah, I know.
In the first episode.
That's why I said, I was like, oh,
but I thought that's where I think that, you know, it's like it's a trick almost to make it feel a little more less like setup. Right. Because they're introducing the story element and then they basically have a duplicate of that character that they can pick up with later after they've circled back and done more setup.
But the thing is, the funny thing about it is, even before I watched the second episode, clearly, because we've seen her, like, actress and other things, I said she's a clone or there's two. We had two Datas. Why couldn't we have two of her?
Right.
You know, so I don't think that should be that surprising. But it's one extreme or the other. It's like, if they gave everything away in the first episode, it'd be like, oh, they gave us too much. Where are we going to go from here? You know?
And it's just different. It's a more modern version. It's the Game of Thrones type of thing where you can have episodes that are just, it took, like, it's chapter one of a however many part story.
Now, I will say this. If we're in chapter six or seven and it's the same pace as the first episode, then I will agree with the critics.
Yeah.
But I don't think that that's what's happening. I think it's a slow build. And then whenever he gets on a ship and gets in space, things are going to pick up.
It's going to move. Yeah. So anyway, but that's in weeks to come. We want to hear what you think about Picard, which is that it's great. I'm telling you what to think. I'm kidding.
We only want to hear the good stuff. If you don't like it,
No.
You got to leave. No, I'm kidding.
But of course, we all have our different reactions. So whatever you think, we'd love to hear about it. You can comment and let us know. Please rate and review the podcast. It really does help. Subscribe, of course, because we do this every week with all kinds of fun stuff, not just Star Wars and Star Trek. And follow all the other Sci-Fi Wire podcasts that are happening. The Churn, Fandom Files, Strong Female Characters, the Project Blue Book podcast, as we mentioned earlier today. What else is going on? Oh, so of course, Jabba the Pod. How could I forget?
I was going to say Star Wars.
Yeah, that one. And much more to come as we go through the year. Karima, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
I know you're very famous now, and I appreciate you making the time. for the little people.
I am not famous. Oh,
but
my God.
Where can people find you online?
They can find me, the Blurred Girl, TheBlerdGurl, all over the interwebs, but mostly on Twitter and Instagram. And Marvel Voices is available for pre-order only till Monday. It's coming out in February, February 19th. But please pre-order. Please, please, please. And I will be taking mail for Adam because he's not on the interwebs anymore.
That's right. You can send me a letter by post.
Oh my God. That's like the post office. Send him an owl.
There you go. Send me an owl. I'll be sure to get it. Thank you so much for joining us this week on Who Won the Week. And we'll see you again for the next episode next week.